I wanted to introduce our amazing guest speaker. I can't believe we haven't had Macy on before, but she's been a part of many of the events we've done together over the course of the last couple of years. She is a seasoned veteran in the fight for fair and safe sport for women. She's a just recently former NCAA volleyball stud. And now I forgot the CWA at the front of here, but she's a CWA women's sports spokesperson. And we're thrilled to have her tonight because volleyball is making some headlines. So we're here to talk about it, discuss her experience, and just hear more from Macy because she's the expert when it comes to NCAA volleyball.
Well, thank you for the introduction. It's a pleasure to be here. I am just so grateful for Icons and all of y'all's work. It's been so great to see you guys kind of from birth of Icons to continue growing to all that you guys are today and the impact that we continue to see and that female athletes enjoy by the protections that you guys fight for. So thank you so much for all of the work that you've been doing. For those of you who don't know who I am, like she said, I'm Macy Petty. I work for Concerned Women for America. A little bit about my story. I just graduated from playing 4 years of NCAA volleyball. It was quite the privilege and something that I'm just so grateful for, but it was not something that came easily. If any of you have played sports or have children who have played sports, you know a little bit of what the journey looks like to get to this point. A lot of sacrifice financially, socially. For volleyball, you have to compete in these volleyball tournaments, these national tournaments. You travel every weekend to go to a different place in the country and compete in front of hopefully lots of college scouts. That's where they go to seek talent. And so, as a high schooler, that's how I spent my weekends. I didn't go to prom, rarely went to, the beach unless there was a volleyball tournament there. But my family and I were willing to make these sacrifices in hopes that I would one day receive an academic or athletic scholarship, towards my college education. At one of these tournaments in particular, I walked up to the court and my opponent was a man. And I've now graduated college, and this was before I even got to college. This was 5 years ago now. So this wasn't a debate happening on the national stage by any means. And I was just generally confused. Like, that's the only way I know how to describe it. It wasn't something where I was, oh, this is a big injustice and I'm going to take to Fox News. It was like, okay, this is obviously cheating and somebody's going to figure it out and put a stop to it. We played the game anyway, not wanting to ruffle any feathers and hope to try and woo these college scouts anyway, but instead we were just completely embarrassed. Volleyball nets for men are 7 inches higher than volleyball nets for women. So he was playing on a net 7 inches shorter than he should have. And that accompanying his other numerous biological advantages just pounded the ball in our faces and embarrassed us in front of all of these college scouts. So we walked away pretty embarrassed, pretty defeated, but again, just assuming that these governing organizations had our best interest in mind. So I continued with volleyball by the grace of God, did continue to eventually play college volleyball with an athletic scholarship, which I was so grateful for that experience, and was able to start testifying in states about what I had gone through in college or in my recruiting process. And so, as a freshman in college, I zoomed into my first testifying experience in South Carolina. I was just a little freshman at the time, and they didn't pass the bill. I was confused why we even needed to hear this bill in the first place, because I was like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard, Obviously, boys had to play on boys' teams. Obviously, girls had to play on girls' teams. Why is this even a bill? But I understood because of my experience that not everybody got that, apparently. So I went, I told them my story, and they were like, nah, this isn't really happening. We don't really need this bill. And I was like, what do you mean? I'm a South Carolinian sitting in front of you telling you it happened to me. Little did they know there was another college freshman athlete, male athlete, playing at Coastal Carolina in South Carolina. And so they thought this wasn't happening, but in reality, there was a male athlete in their own state's borders putting female athletes in danger. Well, fast forward about a year, I testified again in South Carolina, and this time they actually did pass the bill because there was some more controversy swelling in the nation that finally got their eyes on the problem and they realized this is something they needed to be proactive on. Well, when they did that, this male athlete in South Carolina and coastal Carolina then had to transfer out to California. And that's where we pick up today. This athlete is still competing on a team at San Jose State. He played under the radar for the first couple of years of his athletic career. Now he's in his fifth year. If you don't know how NCAA eligibility works, you can add on some years because of COVID and other things. So he's still eligible to play there. And he was recently discovered to be a male athlete on the team in April. And so now there's kind of this new awareness of this increased risk for female injury when they compete against this male athlete. So we've seen schools pull out of competition against this athlete. Before this, they weren't even given the respect from the NCAA or San Jose State to even let their opponents know that this was going on and that this is the decision. So then the universities or the athletes can make an informed decision about whether this is a risk that they were willing to take, both to their safety and their dignity. So that's kind of where we are today. I hope that was a good little lead-in for a great discussion today.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up. There's two things I want to explore from what you said. Let's go to the most recent thing first, that he was discovered. I think there were so many people rumbling about. They knew this guy was a guy. I mean, everyone was suspecting it. The problem that we run into, and I think you alluded to this when I talked to you earlier today, is that unless people have clear confirmation, unless the girls and the families involved have clear confirmation and they know that this is a guy, like they've got concrete proof, people are so scared to call this out or question it because they're afraid of being wrong. Like everyone's just looking over their shoulder. There were a lot of people suspecting for many, many years. But it wasn't until recently when we're like, we had the concrete proof. We found that this so. I mean, it just testifies to you talked about. Well, I would
I
like you
did.
to share about your experiences in college.
Yeah, I see where you're going with this. So I was at a tournament once in college. It was actually this past year. And it was after dinner. My coach was like, hey, some of us are going to go back and watch some other games. I had a paper I had to write. So I went back to my hotel room. It wasn't mandatory. It was just kind of if girls wanted to go watch some extra volleyball. So some of my teammates went and they watched this game and they saw an athlete on the court. They're like, this is not right. Like, I've never seen an athlete move in this way and have this capability in a certain way. So they start calling me. My phone just starts blowing up because they knew that this was a fight that I was engaged in. And they were like, Macy, we think there's a boy here, but we don't know how to like figure it out or prove it. But we're nervous. Like, because at these tournaments, you'll sometimes overlap in locker rooms for a few minutes. So there was just this general fear of what was going on. And it kind of caused this moment of reflection for me of like, how did we get here? How is this something that we have to fear and think about? Kind of that first experience I had, I was like, this is something that I had taken for granted my entire life. I never thought about the privilege it was to have women's sports where we have to compete against other women. But now that's completely been called into question, and we have to walk up to the court wondering if our opponents are even women. Because, like I said, the NCAA isn't giving girls the respect of even telling them if their opponent is a man. They just walk up to the court and feel completely blindsided when it's a male athlete on the other side, and they realize that they're at risk of an increased risk of danger.
Well, and it's like, it's not even that you think you walk up and you like, it's just a heavy burden, right? It feels like you're standing on sand, like things are shifting around you. Am I going to get to this place? And is there going to be a guy? Is it going to be fair? How would I question? It's just, it's really an excessive weight for the female athletes to carry to even that they even have to let this cross their mind. And I thought your comment to me earlier say you're like, why do we even have to think about this? Like, why do we have to care about it? It's something that the men are not having to do. The men are not having to go around saying, huh, I wonder if, there's a jaguar in this race or, and whatever, like you're not worried that you're at a total disadvantage other than doping, but women carry that as well.
And
So.
even that question and uncertainty has been enough to have girls just call out completely. I've talked to young female athletes, I mean, freshmen in college or freshmen in high school, are saying, I don't know that it's even worth it. Like, I don't want to walk into a locker room and be afraid that a man's going to come in. That's too much for me to have to bear to even think of that being a possibility. So I'm just not going to play. And it's crazy to think about this now. It's like Title IX is what created these opportunities. And now it's Title IX that's pushing girls out of them.
Yeah. And I think there's even deeper than that is that if you run into that position as a, you like, I need to have a game plan. Like, how would I put it out? Who would I speak to? Do I know who my advocates are? You know, how would I handle the situation? And could I do anything to rectify it? Or am I powerless? And that's a heavy weight to carry too, because you're problem solving for something that you shouldn't have to problem solve for. It's Absolutely. Not meant to be a part of it. The other thing you said, and I'm trying to remember where it was, there's this great line that I recently came across, and I don't even think it was related to this issue, but I think it's applicable. And that is it was because you were talking about the South Carolina bill. Mm-hmm. And that they didn't pass it. And it's like this, and you were like, wait, why not? I'm telling you this happened to me. But really, like, this is a situation where we know there will be victims, even if we don't see the victims. Mm-hmm. So you don't get the opportunity to say, oh, this is like that whole claim that this is a bill looking for a problem. No,
right.
If this isn't a law, if this isn't protected, we don't have to see the victims now to know that they will be there. Right. They will come.
And the same thing happened in North Carolina. They had an opportunity to pass the bill and they said, nope, not a real problem. We're not going to do it. And then you have Peyton McNabb that following fall suffer severe head and neck injuries because they allowed a male on the court. So then they got their act together and passed it. But we can't wait for girls to get severe injuries to act on it.
Especially when you know it's coming, right? This, right. You can know there will be victims, even if you don't see them today. I think that's a really good line. So talking about what's going on right now, what do you see as, so I asked you earlier today, what was the vibe on your volleyball team? And you gave me an answer. I think it's applicable to the conversation today because we're seeing so many girls standing up for their rights, but just tell a little bit about your experience being the lone person standing up on your team.
Yeah, well, I don't want to overgeneralize and say every single person on my team was so supportive, but I will say the majority of female athletes don't want to play against a man. And that's what it comes down to. We can have discussions about where they fall ideologically, but they don't want to look across the court and know that they are at an unfair advantage and risk losing everything that they've fought for. That's pretty simple. And that's a pretty easy ask of female athletes. But it was during my college years, I went to a Christian school. Most of my team was very supportive. I had a great administration, athletic administration, who was very supportive. I always made it clear I was never speaking on behalf of the school, but they were very kind in making sure that I could express my opinions on the issue, which I think a lot of schools are lacking now. And so that's definitely something to take into consideration if a girl is getting recruited to a school, just how much they value things like free speech, among other things, like sex-based protections. But that was a great privilege that I was able to have because of going to such a great school. But among my other female athletes, they were very supportive. They still are very supportive and continuing to support, you know, to champion these values even after they're done, because a lot of them want to have little girl volleyball players one day.
Yeah, because they love their experience. Right. So we've got now four teams across NCAA and Division I volleyball that have backed out of competing against San Jose State. We know that the young ladies on the team are not excited about, they are making this stand and they are advocating for themselves with their administrations, and the administrations are starting to pay heed. I personally feel like that's kind of a reversal of the situation of what should be. These girls shouldn't be having to advocate for rights that, you know, they believe that they have inherently from Title IX, from just being women, that they shouldn't have to be competing against men. So we, you and I talked and we said, we agreed that the schools are just kind of doing the bare minimum and making their statements.
Right.
But I am so, like, I'm proud of, I just, the one word that has popped out to me in this is like, these are heroic efforts of these mm-hmm. young women. And it's unique because these are team experiences. So a volleyball team all dealing with this, you know, traveling together, they're all competing in the same event together. I mean, what can you speak to that at all? Like how the volleyball community is tight knit. They might be they're communicating with each other behind the scenes. Any comments on it?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many dynamics that go on that, of course, we don't know exactly what's going on behind the scenes. But like you said, when these girls are in season, it is so tight knit. They are spending every single second together. You are on bus rides together, plane rides, hotel rooms, everything. Those 3 or 4 months of season, you are one group, very close knit. So I would assume that there's a lot of conversations happening, even the schools that aren't going to have to face San Jose State in regular season. It's become such a big wave of female athletes within NCAA volleyball that I'm sure these conversations are happening across the board. And we know what those conversations are looking like because we're seeing the impact of them. We're seeing these teams pull out. And we don't, again, know exactly what that if that's looking like, the teams going to administration or administration going to the teams. But it does signify something really significant, because for a long time, we have been going to the NCAA and asking for some kind of change. But there's been this like false idea, I guess, in their minds that they're completely outside of authority. And there's some, you know, godlike figure that stands outside of any kind of accountability. But now we're seeing, of course they're accountable. Of course they're accountable specifically to the female athletes that are in their membership, because no one's going to pay for games if the girls aren't there. No one's going to pay to go to a stadium if the universities aren't hosting the games. And so it really is such a powerful moment where you're seeing these girls take part of their dignity back by saying, no, I've given my whole life to be an NCAA athlete. That means something to me, and I'm going to protect the integrity of the institution from the inside.
Yeah, I agree with you. We've talked a little bit. We're very split, because asking women to quit or to step aside or to cancel an appearance I personally have really mixed feelings about it, because these girls are being robbed of a chance to play that they have earned by right of the accomplishments and the hard work that they've put in. And that's a shame. They're being robbed of it and pulling out because a man is asserting himself. Right. And that feels so wrong to me, that a woman could be bullied out of that opportunity that she earned and she deserves. That frustrates me. And I also feel like it's not their job. It's not the women's playing job to take care of this. Rules are in place for safety and fairness and integrity in the competition before any athlete takes the court. And those rules, that is the basis of sport. So it is up to the people who are making the rules. So I kind of feel like... And I don't think any athlete would say, like, going into a Super Bowl championship or something, hey, how do you feel about, we'll adjust the rules, or don't you think the rules need changing? Like, why don't you take a stand for this? It's absolutely ridiculous, the burden that's being placed on these young female athletes. But on the flip side now, with this many women taking a stand, like, the NCAA cannot ignore this forever. Right. And the message is getting out there across the nation that women have had it. Yeah. They've had it.
Yeah.
And we're not going back.
Yeah.
So I think do you have any comments on like where we go from here? Why this is going to be a pivotal moment? What are you excited about?
Yeah. Well, I think you're exactly right. Like, this is a burden that female athletes were never supposed to bear. That is why we have organizations like the NCAA, is to protect fairness and protect opportunity. But the women have been bearing this burden so gracefully and with so much power. And I just have so much respect for them, for the way that they have been able to navigate this. They receive a lot of flack, but I think people just don't quite understand all of the dynamics going on inside, especially with institutional pressures. We already hit on free speech, but there's just so much that goes into it. But already having four schools pull out has been amazing to see. And like you said, we are starting to see that tide turn. And we're seeing this momentum swell. And so I'm really excited to see where that's going to go, specifically because just the sheer number, three conference games is huge. And so Mountain West cannot ignore this. NCAA cannot ignore this. This is a really big thing, and the entire nation is looking at them.
You know, you just gave me a really good idea. I'm getting really inspired, like, because how excited you are. I'm like, I think we should do something for the girls that are taking these positions. And I'm going to just on this webinar say, like, call up the different schools, call up the athletic directors of these schools. What is it? It's Utah State, Southern Utah, Boise State, and Wyoming. Mm-hmm. Call up the athletic directors. Ask to speak to the head athletic director, and donate $25 to the university. Yeah. Just because you say, I'm so impressed with these young women.
That's so true.
I think it's a great idea, right? And then, yeah. I mean, I think that some of us, I'm going to see if we can do something about sending them t-shirts, or if we could get in touch with the gals that we've spoken with, and get everyone, send them a big thing. Cause I think it's, they need to have I think they're getting a lot of good publicity, and there's a lot of love online, but I think, you know, we need back to put something tangible. Yeah. Back it up.
I agree. Especially because a lot of times you can donate specifically to teams. I know that we would have fundraisers sometimes and you'd get a nice dinner out of it or something like that. So I think that would be really sweet. I love that idea. We have Young Women for America as our college branch of Concerned Women for America. And we have chapters at a lot of these schools, and a lot of the women have just been able to rally together to go to the administration and just tell them how much they respect them for standing up for their dignity, even though they're not on the women's volleyball team.
That's awesome. As a
student of that university, letting them know how much they appreciate it.
And how much it matters. You made a mention that, you know, it's like they're taking their dignity back. They are taking their dignity back, but it's more than just, so it's not just fairness and safety is something I've kind of figured out. It's that by allowing these, just a single man to take the place of a woman, and like, just the school saying, no, make room for him, or the school, an opposing team, no, don't complain about this, like, just play the game. This is robbing every single woman there participating, and I would honestly say even every single woman watching. Mm-hmm. It's teaching them a lesson that this guy is more important than theirs. Everyone knows it's wrong. Right. Everyone knows that he is taking the place of a deserving woman, and so he is the priority. And that robs women of being recognized as just valuable enough to be granted these opportunities. And it is, so it's shaming.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And it's one thing for a college athlete to walk through this, because she has lived a life before seeing all of this unravel, and she knows how complicated the circumstances are. But you think about a girl on a middle school volleyball team who's living this whole sports thing for the first time, and you think about how formative sports can be for these young minds and the lessons that they learn. And historically, those have been really great lessons. But now girls are getting pushed aside, pushed onto the sidelines, and being told to let the men play. And it's truly sabotaging their instincts against them. You think about things like they're desensitized to male dominance, desensitized to male nudity in some circumstances. And that can be just so devastating, especially later in life when those instincts they've been hijacked.
And I think the ramifications for that stretch a lot further than people realize. I think it affects interpersonal relationships. It affects how you see yourself, what role you expect to play, whether or not you'll stick up for women in other positions, or how important, even just subtle. I see a question here. Yeah, boy, someone answered it. Good. Yeah, I think that, so let's talk for a moment about Brooke Slusser, who is the captain of the San Jose State team that's taking such a bold, brave stand and just really saying, out in California and at a school that has stripped her of even the knowledge that she was joining a team with a man, didn't have the decency to tell her, we are advising you to room with a man, not telling her she's going to be sharing hotel rooms with a man. And in fact, asking the guy, who's your preference to stay with, as if it's his concern they are worried about.
Yeah.
Not worrying about the woman at all. So the bravery, what did this take in college to when your team is being put through this and your school's not supporting you?
I cannot imagine. I remember when the news first came out and we were in staff meeting and we were talking about it, I was like, hold on, we need to pray for this girl right now. Because like we talked about, when you're in season, you are with these people all the time. You're on a bus ride with them for hours and hours and hours. You're in hotel rooms with them. You're on plane rides and practices several times a day. They're the only people you see the whole time you're in season. And so I can't imagine what the team dynamics were like right now for her to be standing up in this position, still being on the team, still playing with the male athlete. I'm just so impressed by her bravery. Honestly, it wasn't this one-time game where she played against the boy, it was over, and then she took to the courts. No, she's living in it right now while she's fighting in the courts.
And just the ability, the foresight, I think the thing we've been struck by when we have talked to her is just the foresight, like this has to stop. It has to stop now.
And she really put herself on the line to do it.
Yeah. And realizing it's not going to stop for her, that she's going to continue to live this.
Yeah.
So she's fighting for everyone else and trying so bravely to be a leader for the rest of the girls on that team and to give courage to everyone else that she's having to play against, to say, look, I know this is wrong and I don't want to be here, but I'm trying. I think it was just as you're just a year out of school. The amount of courage I think it has taken you, and that maybe we should talk about this, how wonderful it is as a young woman to find your voice and to feel the liberation of being able to speak up for yourself. Like, I feel like it just kind of grounds you. You've got like, okay, I can face these things. I can do hard things. I can, choose the right path on this. And it's incredible to see young women find that at your ages. So
yeah, it is so true. What a moment we're living in, and what a beautiful opportunity for women to rise up. Our Young Women for America program has really just thrived in this, because it really is. I mean, we're a Christian organization. We see this as an opportunity that the Lord is using to put young women as vessels for truth and culture. What a cool opportunity for women, young women, college aged and younger women, to really stand on the front lines here. I mean, yeah, we have people fighting in the courts. We have lobbyists. We have all these other people, which are so necessary and so needed. And I'm so grateful for all of their work. But man, how cool is it that it's female athletes, the ones who have been taught how to be determined and leaders and how to communicate and all these things their whole life. And now they're turning around and using those skills to promote truth and stand up for themselves in this culture.
And I think you just hit on something really neat. This is a very unifying movement. And I think it's important for all of us in women's sports, no matter where we stand on other issues, to recognize like we're in this together. This is about the future of women, and finding an organization that you feel like resonates with you to help you find that voice is an important, like, don't miss out on that opportunity because you're frightened when you're young. Go find your voice, use it. That's great, Macy. Well, let's look forward. What do we think? Oh gosh. Okay. I'm realizing. So let's talk about what's happening tonight. It's about the time that the volleyball game is kicking off tonight between Colorado State and San Jose State. You want to tell us? I know you and I spoke, so you're.
No, I want you to tell it.
You want me to tell it? Okay. Well, so we know that there are players on the Colorado State team that are not excited to be there. They feel like it's wrong. They wish their team would stand down, but there are other girls on the team, in particular, at least one of the captains who is an activist on the other side. And there have been threats on Brooks' safety. So they are traveling with security. There will be metal detectors at the game, at the entrance. There will be police and security at the game. And that's a frightening prospect. But then on top of that, because Colorado State is not supporting an environment where their young athletes feel empowered. They're the ones that don't want to play are scared and quiet at this point. And the mm-hmm. university is making tonight, what did we call it? They are making it their annual.
Oh my gosh. It's what so did ridiculous.
I it to you, didn't I? It's their
inclusivity it's their night.
Annual inclusivity excellence game. And so when I sat down, you were like,
can I make this up?
It's absolutely insane. And yeah. I feel like I'm jumping back in time almost 3 years ago now. I can't even believe it's been that long to the environment that was forced upon those young women in the Ivy League, where they were just, you know, there were speeches and presentations and meetings and everything just beating them over the head saying, you're a horrible person if you don't accept this guy and if you don't support him and if we don't make him the center of it. Right. And it's just a stifling, scary position to be in because you feel completely abandoned. And so we need to get a message out to those young women that this should not be happening to them. But also just, can you imagine a year ago if that happened to you?
Oh, it's so crazy. And I mean, they're just making a mockery of these women and their beliefs that are so common sense. And you know that they understand where they're coming from, but instead they want to shove it in their face anyway. And it's absolutely sick. It's creating a spectacle of female athletics, which is something so beautiful. And we're so proud of how female athletics has developed, but now it's turned into some kind of vehicle for ideology, I guess, to get pushed on other people. But it is really sad to see the safety concerns that this raises and that the school is continuing with this celebration anyway. I was just about to say
it's a celebration, but what I think what's so insulting about it is that it's a celebration of demoralizing women.
Mm. It is. We have a Colorado State Director for Concerned Women for America who sent a letter to the president, to the board, to the athletic director, letting him know of the situation and laying out for him how this was putting his female athletes at an increased risk of injury. And she said, you know, if you continue with this game, this is what you're doing and you'll probably be liable for it later. And they responded to her and said, nope, we're going to play anyway. We're going to play as scheduled. Despite this clear explanation that it would be putting his female athletes in danger. So not only are they continuing to play, but they're also shoving it in the face of these female athletes who they know don't agree with having to play.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I see that Jim just said last year's Colorado State inclusivity event included a transgender seminar featuring reporter Aaron in the Morn, who's of course a full grown man that's a full activist on supporting. He's a man who thinks he's a woman. And the idea that we would make this entire event, this volleyball game, after so many women are finding their voice, all about standing up for this guy who's ruining the college experience of all of these women and force, like putting them in a position where they have to take their own hard-earned opportunities and say, no, thanks, because I'm going to stand on principle. It's so frustrating.
It's so frustrating. So I mean, when you told me that, I you can't help but laugh here when you're like, this has to be some sort of joke. Like they have to be saying, haha, gotcha at some point. But I thought that way back with Leah Thomas. I remember standing outside of the Aquatic Center at the national championship. And I'm like, at what point is he going to be like, haha, gotcha. This is why we need different rules. But that never happened.
I know. It feels like you're living in the twilight zone that they can push it further and further and further. And it's like, and no one's going to stop anything. It's a runaway train.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on where we go from here? I know that CWA has filed some paperwork. I'm going to let you talk about that. And then what are your thoughts on the NCAA situation? How do you think that we might be able to exert more pressure? Do you have any ideas for those listening?
Of course. Yeah. Well, CWA did file the first federal action against San Jose State with a civil rights complaint. This is a willful violation of Title IX and discrimination against women in educational opportunities. And so we are calling on the Department of Education to do their federally mandated job in protecting women's opportunities under Title IX. So we are looking forward to a response there. This is our fourth civil rights complaint in this area. We did file one against Leah Thomas. Or against the University of Pennsylvania for rostering Leah Thomas in one of their women's roster spots.
So what do these do? I'm gonna interrupt you. What do these do? Because obviously these are like Pennsylvania was in a difficult state that didn't have a state law and we weren't seeing, and this is in California, you know, it's likely not gonna overturn state law in California, but what is the point of this and what attention does it bring? What pressure does it bring?
Yeah, well, so the Office of Civil Rights under the Department of Education is responsible for enforcing Title IX. And so there have been a lot of changes to Title IX, but they claim that they don't affect sports yet. Obviously, there's a lot of debates about that. But if it doesn't affect sports, then we're saying, hey, look, here we are, discrimination against women in sports. And so we're calling on the Department of Education under the Office of Civil Rights to add some accountability there and make the path straight. Back in 2020, we filed one of these, and I can't remember the name of the school right now, but it was a very similar circumstance where they were going to roster a male and a female spot. And Concerned Women for America filed a civil rights complaint and were able to get the school policy changed actually to protect sex-based protections within that school under Title IX. So we are hopeful. This Department of Education has not been as sympathetic or passionate in their federal obligation to protect women's rights, but we'll do it nonetheless and continue fighting. And hopefully we'll see some change in the Department of Education in their how they prioritize women's.
They are required to investigate it when you all submit, though, right? So that's kind of the point of this is to have it on record that I think at least the way it's been explained to me that these filings might seem like, you know, we're putting them into just a nothing space, but it's actually intentional because they're on record, even if they're in a state where we don't expect a big change or with an administration that isn't recognizing women, that it's on record and investigation, something was filed. So we can pull that back out as the momentum turns and we recognize, because we're going to, right? We're going to going to earn this back. Women are going to find their space. As Marcy always says, women are going to win again.
Right.
We're going to end up on the right side of history. So this is a documentation.
Yes. Yeah. And accountability. That's exactly right. And forcing this investigation. So that's definitely a place that we've been active on this. Charlie Baker also sent this very bizarre letter to the U.S. Senate last month in which he claimed that the NCAA trans inclusion policies weren't mandatory and that schools can operate in their own institutional values. We know that that's completely bogus. First of all, because they don't even give the decency of letting the schools know if their opponent is a man. And obviously there's NCAA placed incentives for opting out of the games.
And the NCAA actually threatened not to hold championships or large events in states.
That's
that
exactly
didn't.
Right.
So to say this is optional, like we're going to punish
it's completely
you, but
it's bogus. Completely well, bogus.
And we're still seeing punishment from it. So,
And if you think about like payouts and tournament appearances and all these kinds of things that are obviously there because of NCAA governance. But he said it nonetheless. And so we want to make sure that schools are aware that he said that. Because, like I said,
call his bluff.
Right. Yeah.
Call his bluff.
The NCAA has tried to operate as if they are outside of any kind of accountability. So we do want to use this to add onto this accountability of letting schools stand up to this giant of NCAA. So we're hoping that more schools follow in this lead and actually adopt some institutional policies. Not only say that they won't roster a male athlete in any of their women's roster spots, but also say if there is a known athlete on the other side of the court, we're just not going to play. The main focus of this is just alleviating the burden off of the female athletes. That would have meant a lot to me as a female athlete when I was getting recruited, if I knew a school was willing to put themselves on the line so that I didn't have to make those decisions and have to worry about that.
You know, that's a really good point. I have to say that my girls both held, hosted recruits after the Leah Thomas thing. And my younger daughter in particular hosted quite a few. And the first question to prospective student athletes coming in to take those trips was, am I going to have to face a Leah Thomas situation? Am I going to have to face anything like that here? And that is the first thing on a young athlete's mind, whether or not their parents prep them. I mean, this is the conversation that the girls are having. I don't want to go through that.
Right.
I don't want to deal with it. And the fact that they have to worry about that, I mean, it is a concern. So
there's already enough to worry about when it comes to college visits. But I think even more than that, it just speaks to the institutional values and their priorities. And it shows that they're going to put the safety and dignity of their female athletes first. Whether or not they even come to that situation is another thing. But it does give the peace of mind knowing that they will have your back.
Yeah. For sure. And knowing that you are at least allowed to speak about it and to take a position of, I don't want to be placed in this position, and that someone will protect you or at least look out for you. Huge issue. So let's go. We were going somewhere important. Oh, Charlie Baker's statement. And calling his bluff, universities taking a position that puts pressure on them. But the utter irony of making that statement as, you know, the whole as the institution that sets the rules and hosts national championships. How can you host a national championship if you don't have a consistent rule base for the team you invite?
And it's he's told Congress, he wrote a letter to Congress and he said, we would welcome some federal regulation. I'm like, Mr. Baker, that's your job. Like, you are the NCAA. That is your job here. And he's trying to back away from any responsibility. But everyone knows that this is completely bogus and a cop out, because all of this ultimately falls on his hands.
It's crazy to think that these young women are holding the hands of leaders that are supposed to have the courage and backbone to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, kudos to them, these girls that are taking these stances and women that are finding their voice all over the country. Any of you listening, like, what man or woman, like, we as a society are desperate to find people who have the guts to do the right thing, no matter the cost, and can speak honestly and transparently and defend what's right, especially in this case, defending women and girls. So I'm beyond impressed that there are some incredible young women at these universities leading that way. But I hope that the men that are in charge and the leaders of those institutions, and the women, where I think there are some presidents, female presidents of some of these universities.
Linda Livingstone, chair of the board.
Yeah. Well, and I think Boise State has a female president as well, who is supporting her female athletes. But it's time for these leaders to stand up and say, yeah, you know, this is not acceptable on our watch.
Right.
And they put pressure on the
NCAA. They know they exactly what's right and wrong. They just have to have the courage to actually say it and use their position to defend it.
It's so incredible that these girls are doing it, though.
I know.
Awesome. Someone said, Jim Richards says, it's like the civil rights movement. The NCAA rules are wrong. The oppressed had to stand up because the leaders were cowards. Yeah, we got to show the light. Show them the light. So what do we do going forward, Macy? How do you think we keep the pressure on? I mean, there's only so many teams in the Mountain West Conference. We might get another team or two, but four teams is a huge mess for the NCAA to have to unwind in a conference of what? 10, 12 teams? It can't be that big. Do you know how big it is?
I don't. Not off the top of my head.
Yeah, it's got to be a decent percentage. But I guess three teams in conference, though, because Southern Utah was an out-of-conference game. But still, how are you going to host a conference championship? And I guess that's when the rubber is going to hit the road, because the girls are going to be asked to play there.
Yeah.
How do you think do you have ideas going forward? Just keep the story in the news?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it really does seem like the house of cards is falling now, and we just got to keep hitting it at every angle. Because we're seeing it fall. We're seeing this be effective. And it comes to the individual person as far as what kind of sphere of influence it looks like, whether it looks like going to school boards or if they're on the board of a school that would want to adopt a policy like I had described, just kind of being proactive on the issue, whatever it is, whatever we can just continue to affirm that this is what the majority of Americans think. This is right here, and there's no going around that.
You just reminded me, I think it's not just school boards. So for colleges, it seems like you go to school boards, you influence your kid's school board or your neighbor's school board.
Yeah.
But one thing we're starting to realize is where we really want to place the pressure in states, and this for anyone listening to this, is the Board of Governors. Mm-hmm. The Board of Governors can also adopt policy that impacts the state at the college level. So anyone listening that's in Idaho or Utah, or I mean, even the Board of Governors and those are the figure out who those people are, target them, write an email to each of them. I don't want to see this in my state. I want the young women to feel safe and to be backed. You know, I don't.
Right. Yeah. Everyone's position is going to look a little bit different. But just continuing to amplify and expose where this is happening, and back the female athletes, honestly, just continue to encourage this kind of courage that we're seeing spark across the country, because it's really inspiring. And the NCAA is having to look, and eventually we're going to have to get some kind of statement out of them.
13 schools. Okay. 12 schools in the Mountain West Conference. So three teams that, I mean, we've got 25% of the conference is saying no. That's a significant percentage. Yeah. So we'll keep working on those. Some states are going to be harder than others. I'm very curious to see what's going on in the game tonight.
I know
there's been a lot of requests for comments after. We will see. All right. Well, so what should we touch on to wrap this up? We could talk about did you have anything that you wanted to share based on the Olympic experience? What your take was on that?
Not specifically. Were we going to take questions?
Oh yeah, we really should take questions. Let's stay on volleyball. I think there was a volleyball concern in the Olympics, but it of course, since boxing took the, okay, questions. There's no questions in the Q&A. If anyone has questions for Macy about volleyball or her experience.
Oh, I see. It's different than the chat.
How about rallying the male university sports teams to stand with the women's teams? Ooh, good point.
Oh, I love that.
Especially in men's volleyball.
Yeah.
I wonder, we could reach out to some of the men's teams.
Yeah. I bet there's a ton over there. Most of these schools would probably have men's teams. That would be interesting. I like that idea.
I do too. I'm so proud of you. And so second waivers. That's nice. I'm scrolling up looking for questions.
Yeah, I am too.
Can you list those four schools? Oh, we already did that. Brooks. Okay. Yeah. So things we could do. Brooks NIL, Open Doors. Yeah. That's posted here.
Love that.
Here. Search up other athletes by sport and school. Okay, so here's a way you can go to the girls on those teams and send them a message or something. I think that honestly, though, what we really, yes, we want to support the individual female athletes. So anything you want to do with them in particular is great. But letting the school and the athletic department know you support what the team is doing and you want to see them continue this through the season and encourage other athletic directors and have them put pressure on other presidents. That's why you're donating, why you're calling, why you want the, I did this during the Leah Thomas thing, where Rice, if you remember, the Rice coach, spoke up. So I called up Rice and I said, hey, you know, we need to have more coaches that feel like they can do this because they all feel this way. And you actually have, it was Seth Houston. He's just such a wonderful coach and man. I said, I want to donate to your school because I believe in the principles you're standing by here, have this man's back and please encourage him to keep speaking out. And I think those conversations make a difference because it reassures the school and those people like, okay, people actually agree because they are getting pressure from the other side.
Yeah.
And then same thing with the Virginia Tech when they supported Reka speaking out, calling them up. And the best advice I said, I want to speak to an athletic director before to the president of the university before I make my donation. I don't know if you'll get the president in many cases, but you can at least speak to the athletic director and encourage.
Yeah. There's one question that I kind of want to touch on briefly. I think that there's a lot of misinformation out there because it's asking about advocating for sex testing or sex screening.
Oh, yeah.
I think that verification is a big fear-mongering tool because a lot of times they're like, oh, they're going to make women undress themselves to prove they're women. That is so far from the truth. There are official documents that you can use. Unfortunately, those are being sabotaged also because you can change your sex on your passport and things like that. But you can verify sex as easily as a mouth swab. And the NCAA, it's completely non-invasive, but I can speak as an NCAA athlete that during my freshman year, I had to get COVID tested and sophomore year, I had to get COVID tested 3 times a week, all the way up my nose. NCAA is unafraid of that. Cheek swab is nothing.
Yes. I think that was the point of the question is to say, do you like based upon your experience, your recent experience as an NCAA athlete, you have to go through, they make you go through a physical to assess that you're healthy.
Yeah.
Doing a little cheek swab or a test to confirm that it's not even, they make you do an EKG in most cases.
Right. They make you do so much more than that.
Yeah.
But it is something that the other side often likes to weaponize and saying that they're trying to make young women undress to prove they're actually women. That is so untrue in so many ways. I did want to just touch on that really quick.
And we can explain that a cheek swab or a spit test you can test for an active SRY gene or for a Y chromosome. And that's going to be a great screen, a filter for the vast, like over 99% of the population. And then anytime that something comes up unusual, there's easy ways to do genetic testing or confirmation with abdominal ultrasounds or just, I mean, every doctor is going to be able to determine your sex rather easily for many.
Within the first 30 seconds of your physical that everyone has to get.
Yeah. And in really extreme cases, like those individuals would be requiring medical attention or would want medical attention anyway. So it's a good thing for everyone.
Right.
Yeah. Do you see another? Oh, Jen Say, there's a comment about Jen Say making donations. She is, and she's got some new merchandise out. So those of you that don't know XXXY, she has some neat new velour sweats. And then she is also contributing part of the earnings from her recent revenue to these schools that are supporting the women.
Right. We are big believers in voting with your dollar. Don't give money to organizations that hate you and hate your values and turn around and donate money in bad places. Cause we know that a lot of the athletic organizations or athletic apparel companies do not stand for women in sports. So it's great to be able to use your money to protect women's sports and make sure it's going to a good place that stands for your values.
Oh, a couple other good points here about sickle cell. Yeah. I mean, my kids had to do sickle cell tests. Those are more invasive. Too. You have to do those. That's right. And then, all right, let's do this. Okay. Boycott Nike. That's the latest thing. Yes. Let's go with brands that we trust. And yes, I do want to thank you for Jim, for a donation to Icons. We definitely with, the bravery of Brooke and everything that's coming out from this, we're making a dent on the NCAA. We're making them pay attention. We're making sure the story doesn't go away, but we need to fund this lawsuit. So any of you who know anyone that is looking for places, especially coming to approaching the end of the calendar year here, we need help. It's the legal fees are not small and we need to give these women their day in court and see this through. So thank you for passing that on. Macy, I'm going to let you have some closing words. I'm so grateful that you came on and anything that, you know, just encouraging message that you want to leave to the audience. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, well, thank you guys for having me. And thank you again for all of your work with Icons. And thank you for everyone who joined in. Truly, your support and whatever, however that support looks like for all of you is so critical in continuing this fight, whether it's funding the lawsuit or donating to Brooks NIL, or even just sending sweet messages on social media. Every single one of those things matters and it counts. And we're winning this thing. We're seeing the tides turn. And I'm just so grateful to link arms with some wonderful women like you to see it all happen. So we're making history.
Awesome. Thank you, Macy. Marcy, do you want to get to chat with Macy before she heads out?
Yeah, I apologize for not being on. I'm going to put it in this chat right now. There's breaking news. So if you want to read more about what is happening tonight and about the threat against Brooke, here's the article with more detail. So again, it's been a very busy couple weeks, but we just appreciate every single warrior like Macy in the fight, because every person is obviously making a difference. And we just, you know, we're so thrilled to have you tonight, Macy, and continue the good work. We're obviously going to continue to work alongside you to just see this to the finish line, because yes, Kim, you're right. Women will win again.
Love it. All right, see on here, someone said they've emailed all four head coaches directly and told them, you know, giving them praise and saying, being so grateful. That is a great idea and something I hadn't considered. We do have, you can go online and you can find the head coaches and the assistant coaches to all of these schools, like the ones that are boycotting and the ones that haven't yet, and give them your 10 cents. That would be a great thing to do.
Probably this athletic directors too.
Yeah. Yep. Get in there and encourage your friends. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anything that you want to share, Marcy, other than that, thanks for posting the Redux article. We're good.
We're pretty focused on volleyball this month, but we'll have more updates next month. Also, we will be moving to, we will be moving to Twitter.
Yeah, we're going to try to do some Twitter spaces.
Try to do some X spaces to generate just more traffic and accessibility to the masses. So if you don't have a Twitter account yet, get on, sign up, even if it's just to listen to these monthly conversations, because we really want to reach the broad audience. So that's your assignment for next month too. And be looking for some newsletters with more details on that.
Thanks so much, everyone. Good night. Thank you, Macy.
Good night. Bye.